This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. On this week's show, we'll be hearing from Terry Jeffrey on the effects of the media's constant barrage against the president. Representative Ted Poe shares his thoughts on the president's plans for ongoing military action in Afghanistan. And Karen England joins us to talk about a disturbing development in the ongoing efforts by LGBT activists to indoctrinate your kids. But first, over the course of the last year or so, we've seen a number of very high-profile CEOs use their companies as a platform for social change, and in the process, they may be opening themselves up to lawsuits from shareholders. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about these possible ramifications is the Senior Vice President of the John Locke Foundation, John Pritchett.
John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
Insightful piece, and you actually laid out the history going back to a case in the early 1900s where Ford in Michigan, a court decision there, saying that corporations have a responsibility to their shareholders.
Yeah, what a concept, right?
It's different today. We have seen in the last few years, I would say, you know, activism on steroids by business CEOs that you would think that they were running nonprofits as opposed to for-profit companies.
Yeah, and that's our point, Tony, that they have shareholders. They have a shareholder primacy, responsibility, kind of a standard of care, fiduciary duty to do what's in the best interest of doing what publicly traded companies are supposed to do, which is to produce profits and shareholder benefits, long-term value. And, you know, you would think that some of this sort of, in my view, nonsense, non-productive sort of, you know, CEO, social justice warrior stuff would be something that the board would frown upon. But I suspect they're being largely unchecked by the board, which is the point that Ed Tiriakin and I, the professor from Duke, made here, which is, you know, their purpose is economic. And, you know, they're doing a wonderful thing when they're running these publicly traded companies. They're paid well for it. But the purpose is create jobs and add tax revenue and create wealth for people and expand freedoms. And that's all good for us all. And that's a wonderful thing to do rather than get involved in sort of culture warfare. And I think the timeliness of this, all of these folks leaving the White House Council on Manufacturing is what made this an issue that the Wall Street Journal was interested in publishing.
Well, in particular, you talk about several, but one in particular I think is a shining example of this is the Target Corporation, where Brian Cornell, you know, getting out front, becoming an activist on measure in North Carolina, their privacy bill, and we've seen the stock plummet. The share price has plummeted 40% for Target, and you make that point. Have you sensed or seen any restlessness among shareholders?
Well, there have been quite a few analysts who have opined about this, and not that you could necessarily have a direct correlation here, but, I mean, it's pretty clear that within a couple of weeks of my home state, North Carolina, passing their bathroom bill, HB2, within a couple of weeks of that, the inclusive transgender bathroom bill or policy was announced by Target and Cornell. And pretty much from that point on, they were at a stock price in the mid-80s, all-time high. They have, over the period of, that was April 16th of 2016, and as of July of this year, the stock was at about 50. Which is about a $20 billion market cap loss. So now they're in a difficult industry, but you can compare them to someone like Walmart and see a stark difference. And that's the point that Ed and I were trying to make in this article: is they're there is this purpose. There is this deliberation process that a CEO is responsible for. They're highly paid. They have to make decisions about the rationale, gather the information, do the deliberation, have a business process. And then when you see something like this bathroom bill, which clearly one of the things that was missing was the deliberation here, because if Cornell had known his customer at all or surveyed his customer base, would have realized, you know, it's probably better that we spend time figuring out how to innovate and how to compete and how to market rather than trying to do some sort of social justice warfare here, because now all of a sudden millions of my own customers are boycotting me. And that brings the question of, what do we do about it? So our suggestion here is that although the bar is high for plaintiffs and there's wide protection for CEOs of publicly traded companies, they are not without limits. And there has to be reasonable judgment. And our view, in the case of Brian Cornell and others, there is a fiduciary failure, kind of a malpractice, if you will.
John Pritchett, thank you so much. Insightful piece. I'm sure we're going to return to this topic many times. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Tony.
You can find out more about John Pritchett and the John Locke Foundation when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back to talk about the media, President Trump, and his poll numbers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. It seems like you can't spend more than 5 minutes listening to or reading the news without some negative story being reported about President Trump. But the more the media attacks the president, the better his polling numbers seem to do. Joining Tony to talk about this phenomena is CNSNews.com editor-in-chief, Terry Jeffrey.
Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, is it just me, or is it really happen? Is there this inverse effect when the media attacks President Trump trying to tear him down that people, the poll numbers show that people continue to support him? In fact, some of his numbers go up?
Well, I think the people who back Trump, they don't trust the media, they don't like the media, and they know that the media is run by a bunch of liberals, and that essentially the strategic goal of the media is to stop President Trump from achieving exactly those things that his supporters got behind him for, and they want to see him achieve. So I think the key for Trump is not what the media says about him in the next 6 weeks. It's about what he gets done legislatively to advance the promises he made when he ran for president.
So right now, it would appear that his support remains steady, that he's not really losing much support. And as you pointed out, people don't trust the media. Could it be that the media is losing additional credibility with the American public because of these blatant attacks on the president?
It would be hard. It would be hard for them to lose much more credibility than they've already lost. But I do think it's reflecting the deep polarization of our culture. People know the media is on the other side. If you're a conservative, if you're pro-life, if you're for limited government, if you're for putting the interests of the American people first, you know the liberal media is on the other side. And you do see through the attacks. You know, not that, you know, I think that President Trump is sometimes inept in his communication strategy. And he plays into the liberal media. But I think the people who believe in what he's trying to do see that the liberal media isn't going after him necessarily because of what he said that might have been inept. They're using what he said that might have been inept to try and stop him from achieving those good things he promised to do.
Yeah, Terry, that's what my take is, that his comments in the wake of Charlottesville were not the most artful. I mean, he wasn't as clear as I think he could have been, calming down the situation. But it was, to come up with the press's view of him as being supportive of white supremacists, you name it, you really have to twist what he said to come up with their take on it. And I think the American people see through that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, ironically, Tony, because the media hates Trump so much and they want to give him negative publicity, I think there's a potential there for him to go out and do things and say things that the media goes crazy over, but that not only reinforces support, but build it and build pressure on Congress to actually legislate the things he's looking to do. For example, he wants to build the wall on the Mexican border. I think most Americans agree with that. It's one of the reasons he got elected. If he went down to the border in Arizona, say, stood there as President of the United States and says, we're building the wall, and I need Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan to give me the money, we're doing it, the liberal media would go crazy, but his base of support would expand. I think the same is true of his tax cuts. I think the same is true of the spending cuts and the program eliminations he called for in his budget. And I think if President Trump really wants to succeed, he will use the media's hatred of him against them to drive into the public mind all the good things he's trying to do.
But Terry, to your point, it's critical that the president rack up some legislative successes, because the public will, even though they support him, they want to see some things happen.
They do. You know, for example, Tony, and we talked about it before on your program, President Trump gave Congress an outstanding budget. It calls for eliminating all kinds of Corporation for Public Broadcasting, National Endowment for the Arts, National Endowment for the Humanities, Legal Services Corporations. These are federal agencies that year in, year out, not only waste Americans' money, but use them to advance liberal values that are against the values of the people who voted for Donald Trump. If you look at the appropriations bills coming out of the House Appropriations Committee, most of them fund most of the things that Trump is calling to eliminate. Now, they do eliminate Title X in their appropriations bills, which is great. That's a program that funds Planned Parenthood. Trump needs to make them stick to that. But he needs to fight with those leaders in Congress to get them to defund Corporation for Public Broadcasting, defund the National Endowment for the Arts. Because if they don't do it now, they never will. But if he can force Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell to take a stand on those things, the American people will rally around him and be thrilled about what he's doing.
I think you're right. I do not think you can ever count him out. It's been amazing to watch him over the last 2 years and how people respond to him every time the media attacks him. Terry Jeffrey, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Tim.
You can find out more about Terry Jeffrey and CNS News when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, Tony is joined by Representative Ted Poe of Texas.
The Center for Medical Progress continues to release shocking videos that expose the lies and crimes of Planned Parenthood. Come to Values Voter Summit to hear from David DeLeiden, the heroic undercover journalist behind the Planned Parenthood videos, as he discusses his journey and the courage it takes to stand up for the unborn. Other invited and confirmed speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Franklin Graham, Dana Loesch, and many more. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Before we get to our next guest, I'd just like to urge you to take a few moments today to pray for the people in Texas who are being dramatically affected by Hurricane Harvey. And if you can, reach out to ministries like Samaritan's Purse or Southern Baptist Disaster Relief and find out how you can help the people of Texas. Speaking of Texas, Representative Ted Poe of Texas joined Tony earlier this week to talk about the president's speech on the United States' involvement in Afghanistan. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It is good to talk to you.
Your first thoughts on the president's speech last night?
I thought the president did a good job of articulating what America's role will be and not be in Afghanistan, and explaining in a very candid way the situation in Afghanistan. So I was pleased that he did that. As you had just mentioned, the United States is not and will not be apparently anymore in the nation-building business. What that means is we go into a country and then we rebuild the nation in our image with a lot of money going into that country. We have spent billions and billions of dollars in Afghanistan, longest war in American history, and what do we have to show for it? The situation is the same in Afghanistan, if not worse. So the president made that clear, and he wants to, the reason we're there now is to go after the terrorists that are in Afghanistan. Long term, the United States may find themselves in a situation they're going to be there. We're going to be there a long time because I think the nation will fall as soon as we leave, and Pakistan will move in. I say all that to say Congress needs to now weigh in on whether the money and whether or not the United States should be in Afghanistan, and what is our national security interest in being there. And that is Congress's responsibility to weigh in with another authorization to use military force or not to use military force. So that's a quick summary of my opinion of the president's position and his speech.
Do you think your colleagues in Congress will authorize the president to do what he's laid out?
I do not know. And the reason that I am somewhat believe they would not is we have not had proposed to Congress a new authorization to use military force either in Afghanistan or the Middle East or Syria or any other place. And the reason I think is because it may not pass. Now, the president is operating under the original authorization to use military force that President Bush got Congress to pass, had Congress pass, to go after the folks who are responsible for 9/11. So he's operating that way. I think he's operating within the law. But to go further, I think that we need to weigh in. That's Congress's duty. To weigh in on future events in Afghanistan. 16 years is a long time to be at war.
It is. It is. And not to have a whole lot to show for it. Congressman Poe, you mentioned that Pakistan may move in. You have focused very heavily on Pakistan. The president called them out last night in his speech. How do you think Pakistan's going to respond?
They will take and have taken the self-righteous indignation approach. They do not agree that they have been two-faced about their participation, but they have been. We give Pakistan over a billion a year. And part of that money is that they will fight terrorism, and they don't fight terrorism in Afghanistan. That money, some of it's funneled through the ISI. It goes to the Taliban, and those are the folks that are causing crimes against American soldiers and military personnel and wounding them and killing them. But they do fight terrorism in their own country, but they don't fight it in other countries. And so, which is what we pay them to do. And they've been two-faced for years, and we ought to cut the money. We ought to declare them a state sponsor of terror because they are, not just the Taliban, but the Haqqani network. And we need to remove their status as a major non-NATO ally. What that means is they get more military stuff if they are a major non-NATO ally, and we should revoke that status because they have proven they are very two-faced. So I'm glad to see that the president and this administration is doing this. The previous administrations have not done that. They've continued to give money to Pakistan.
Well, as I said, these situations are a lot more complex than they appear on the surface. Congressman Ted Poe, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
It's always good to talk to you, Tony.
You can find out more about Ted Poe when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, what your child soon may be experiencing in their kindergarten classroom.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. The kindergarten classroom is becoming a more dangerous place for the ideals you have for your kids. To introduce the topic and our guest, here's FRC President Tony Perkins.
You may find it hard to believe, but you need to hear this because it could be coming to a classroom near you. At the end of last year, a student who was a boy transitioned publicly in front of his class at the Rockland Academy in Rockland, California, near Sacramento. Now, are you ready for this? It was a kindergarten class. Now, kindergartners were informed that his name would be changing from a boy's name to a girl's name. This is 5 and 6 year old kids, okay? This is what we're talking about. This was in the classroom, the teacher kind of reading stories, promoting this whole thing. With us now is Karen England, Executive Director of the Capital Resource Institute. She's not only following this story, but was advocating on behalf of many troubled parents in the school district, and she joins us now. Karen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thank you, and thank you for having me on such a critical and sad issue.
All right. Correct me. Did I get any of that wrong? Is that what happened?
No, you got it right. I think something that was omitted was that when this all took place and the boy became a girl, that the parents had prearranged with the school and the teacher to actually read two books about changing your gender and coming out on the same day that all this took place. So these kids, these 5-year-olds who aren't even thinking about transgenderism, were actually read the book I Am Jazz and then read a crayon story that says, you know, I'm a red crayon, but I really am blue. They mislabeled me when they put me in the box. Basically promoting you can pick your gender just like a crayon is a different color.
This is crazy. We would, kindergartners being able to choose their sex, their gender, I mean, this is insane, and this is what caught my attention here, other than that you were a part of this, but the fact that the parents said their children came home terrified. One parent saying her little girl was terrified that she might change into a boy. I mean, this is traumatizing of these kids.
It absolutely is, and it's gone even further. So that particular mom, who has been very courageous in this and has had the ability to pull her kids out of school. She's got 2 daughters. And so this daughter came home crying and concerned she was going to turn into a boy. And again, it's 2 girls. Their family's made up of 2 girls and was horrified that maybe I'm a boy or maybe my sister's going to become a boy. That kind of conversation is happening throughout the school district. There was another parent who came home and said, Mom, when he said he was she, I went and told him that God made him he. That's right, isn't it, Mommy? Now, as a parent of a 5-year-old, how confusing is that to even deal with? Am I going to encourage my child to go back and, yes, speak God's truth and risk being considered and labeled a bully and have that in his student file that follows him throughout school? You know, how do you handle that? Because this isn't something they should be having to handle.
Right. And I think that was part of the parents' message to the school board. How did the district respond to the concerns of parents?
Well, Tony, as you know, just like they do nationwide, they're disingenuous. They throw out the word Title IX to intimidate parents and the public and the media and say, we had to do this, and we're trying to tell them, no, you don't, and that before you do anything like this controversial, we want a policy in place that says you must notify parents. Now, this is a charter school, and Tony, you know that charter schools are supposed to be a little bit different than the traditional public schools, and the parents chose this charter school because it was parent-friendly. There is parent notification when a G-rated movie is shown. There is parent permission slip sent home for the eclipse. But this all took place, and they're not even, they're directing parents to talk to their children to find out what happened in that classroom.
Incredible. And it just, it's, when it comes to this issue, it's like the parents have no voice in it, and the kids are going to be taught whatever the school district wants to do, or an activist teacher in this case. Now, what is a what was the teacher's response to this? Because, as you said, the parents were not notified. The teacher just decided to do this in coordination with the parent, the parents of this particular child. What'd she have to say?
Well, she stood up at the meeting, and so she is now public, and her name is out. And she said that she was proud of her students. She is glad she did what she did in order to protect this student. And every person, with the exception of one, that spoke in favor of this teacher doing that was another teacher.
Wow.
Everyone Incredible. Else, with the exception of one, was a parent saying, hey, we want to know. We want to have these discussions with our children.
If you want to find out more about Karen England and the Capital Resource Institute, just head over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to tonyperkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.